ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. It's Friday, the 12th of December. I'm Rachel Mealy, coming to you from the lands of the Turrbal and Yuggera people in Brisbane. The nation's health ministers will enter the final meeting of the year with their federal counterpart armed with figures which show there are currently 3,000 aged care patients languishing in public hospitals. The Commonwealth has been embroiled in a protracted funding stoush with the states and territories, with time running out to clinch a deal by its self-imposed end-of-year deadline. Here's National Health reporter Stephanie Dalzell.
Flying into Brisbane and assembling for a coordinated attack. State and Territory Health Ministers entering the final meeting of the year with their federal counterpart on a mission. New South Wales Health Minister Ryan Park says there are far too many aged care patients languishing in public hospitals.
I'm deeply, deeply furious about what is happening because it is not fair on those patients.
The states and territories have collated new figures showing there are about 3,050 aged care patients stranded in public hospital beds across the country, medically fit for discharge, but with nowhere suitable to go. It's a more than 25% increase in just 3 months. Tasmanian Health Minister Bridget Archer says it's an enormous burden on health systems already under intense demand.
That is the responsibility of the federal government. And whilst they might say, oh, look, we've got a budget under pressure, states also have budgets that are under pressure. And we are stepping in to continue to provide that support.
The Commonwealth has been embroiled in a funding stoush with the states and territories for months as it tries to secure a new 5-year public hospital agreement while protecting a depleted budget bottom line. The ABC has revealed Prime Minister Anthony Albanese sought to ease those tensions, adding an extra $1 billion to an existing offer of $20 billion over 5 years and $2 billion over 4 years to deal with aged care patients stuck in public hospital beds. Queensland Health Minister Tim Nicholls says the offer's underwhelming.
That is not the Christmas present that Australians are looking for from their federal government when it comes to healthcare reform.
The dispute stems back to a national cabinet agreement in 2023, when the federal government promised it would increase its share of public hospital funding to 45% by 2035. In return, the states and territories vowed to help fund some disability services outside the rapidly growing National Disability Insurance Scheme. But 2 years later, a deal is yet to be made, and Mr. Nicholls says the chance of one this year without a largely improved offer is unlikely.
We wake up hopeful, but I'm not sure that we'll get there on Friday. That will really require the Prime Minister to come to the table.
ACT Health Minister Rachel Stephen-Smith says there's a lot at stake.
If the Commonwealth doesn't increase its funding, states and territories will face even greater pressure.
As the states prepare for the stoush to spill over into 2026, the federal government maintains it wants the issue dealt with this year. Health Minister Mark Butler says the Commonwealth's trying to work constructively with the states to relieve pressures in the system. But Shadow Health Minister Anne Rustin says without an urgent agreement, people will suffer.
Stephanie Dalzell. Many people with disability and their families celebrated 3 years ago when a controversial coalition plan to introduce changes to the NDIS through what were called independent assessments were declared dead. Labor was outspoken in its criticism of the policy at the time, but is now facing backlash over a proposal it has put forward, which many see as encompassing the same problems. More from National Disability Affairs reporter Naz Campanella.
People with disability and their families have long been calling for a simpler and fairer way to have assessments done within the NDIS. But Mark Peach from advocacy organisation Every Australian Counts says a proposed change is concerning.
Many of us have overlapping disabilities and complex needs and health conditions. It's impossible for an algorithm to fully understand your needs, especially if a box doesn't exist for you.
The new planning process would see a trained health professional do a questionnaire with a participant called an ICAN in a meeting lasting between 1 to 3 hours. It's then unclear what process will be taken, but eventually a budget and plan is formulated using that questionnaire. Participants with more complex support requirements may still be asked for reports from their treating doctors. Confusion also reigned in a tense sitting of Senate estimates last week, where senators also struggled to get clear answers about automation and the appeals process. Mark Peach is stinging in his assessment of the proposal.
We deserve to know how decisions are made and condemn the lack of appeal rights.
Many in the community are drawing comparisons between this proposal and the one put forward by the Coalition in 2021 for what it called independent assessments. Under that plan, the participant would have seen an allied health professional unknown to them, which would have assessed their needs in a meeting lasting between 1 and 3 hours. Labor criticised the plan at the time. Helen Dickinson, Professor of Public Service Research at the University of New South Wales, is one of those making the comparison.
If it had told me 5 years back that the very people who were arguing against independent assessments would be introducing a more souped-up version of that, I would have been really surprised.
She's worried about the apparent lack of discretion NDIA staff will have to amend a plan created by the new assessment process, and what powers the Administrative Review Tribunal will have to compel the agency to change the total funding amount in a plan.
If you are assessed to need less support, that can mean that you're not able to live independently. You have to make really difficult decisions between do you use support worker hours to go and access your GP or have a shower.
The NDIA says assessments will be conducted by trained assessors and plans will always be approved by real people. The Minister for the NDIS, Jenny McAllister, has told the ABC the ICANN tool will be used to help NDIS staff assess people's needs and then get them support in a fair and consistent way.
Naz Campanella reporting. Patients in New South Wales hospitals say they haven't been given pads and tampons when they need them. New South Wales Health promised in 2022 that period products would be made available, but many say that's still not happening. Now, one woman is on a mission to have vending machines in every state hospital provide pads and tampons at no cost. Penelope Burfitt reports.
This is what you've been offered, something like this.
Yeah.
For more than 3 years, the directive has been clear. Free pads and tampons should be provided to people in New South Wales hospitals who need them. There's even a New South Wales Health memo that says so. But that's not what Wollongong woman Samantha Bruce has experienced in the emergency department of a New South Wales hospital.
When I've been at the hospital and I've asked for a period product, I've been given like an incontinence aid. People who need them for continence aids, 100%, but they're not fit for purpose and it's completely inappropriate.
13% of the more than 42,000 New South Wales women surveyed by not-for-profit Share the Dignity in 2024 said they had the same experience, where they were denied pads and tampons in hospital. Samantha says it undermines patients' sense of dignity.
Some of the stories that I heard, a lady, she was in ICU and she got given a gauze when she got her periods and was told to wait for her family to bring her pads.
Now she's campaigning for vending machines dispensing free pads, tampons and underwear to be installed in every hospital in the state.
Started promoting it to like MPs and stuff.
In September, she put the proposal to State Health Minister Ryan Park's office, along with new cost modelling done by think tank the Australia Institute researcher Sky Predovac.
At a high watermark, it would cost about $7 million a year. And likely much lower than that, which would pay for vending machines as a one-off cost and the ongoing cost of providing period products in hospitals to everyone who need them. That's really about 1% of 1% of the New South Wales state budget.
The proposal's been endorsed by the Royal Australian New Zealand College of Psychiatrists, which says it would give women autonomy and dignity. Local psychiatrist Dr. Karen Williams is also supportive. After seeing the impact firsthand, her patient, who'd suffered a sexual assault, soiled her underwear during an asthma attack in the hospital.
They just left her without any pants on at all. Why do we even have to have this conversation? These are basic things that women need. This is sort of asking government and asking the health department to recognise that this makes trauma worse, this makes symptoms worse.
Asked about the proposal, New South Wales Health Minister Ryan Park says it's something he will consider.
Can't give an answer around whether we'll roll that out at the moment. What I can say is that there's an expectation from me that these products should be available to women when they access our health services.
For Samantha, it's been a long fight, but not one she's giving up.
This is a very tangible way and tangible support you can provide to women that will reduce certain parts of medical misogyny.
Former patient Samantha Bruce ending that report by Penelope Burford. One of Australia's most respected cancer researchers, Professor Richard Scollier, has given an update on his own battle with brain cancer. He was diagnosed with an incurable grade 4 glioblastoma in 2023. Professor Scollier says he has good and bad days, but he can feel his mind and his memory slipping. He says he's focused on spending time with his family at Christmas. Nick Grimm reports.
Josh, you're so naughty.
It's another busy day at Richard Scollier's Sydney home. The dog is hungry, the HSC is over, and two uni students are back home for the holidays.
What's Dad got?
You gave him too little of a piece, Dad. He won't be able to see it.
The high-profile professor is copping a hard time, and he wouldn't have it any other way.
Why is it so little small? Pieces. Give him a whole piece.
It's a really, really special time. I feel blessed that this has been, I've been able to stay alive so long, and the kids have been, and Kate have been so kind to make these things happen and create some great memories.
For a man who made it his mission to cheat death, Richard Scollier is honest about his chances. After 2.5 years fighting a grade 4 glioblastoma, brain cancer, the time he has left with his family is precious. 21-year-old Emily Scollier says the family is determined to make it enjoyable.
Sort of every Christmas, it's always like we don't know what the next year is going to entail. So I think every Christmas we've made it such a mission to just have the most fun and have such a special Christmas.
The 2024 Australian of the Year, I'm proud to announce, is Professor Georgina Long and Professor Richard Scollier.
Even before gaining recognition as Joint Australian of the Year, the medical researcher was already well known for his immunotherapy research with colleague Georgina Long, work that transformed the treatment of melanomas.
We've taken everything, absolutely every bit of knowledge from melanoma, and we've thrown it at Richard's tumour.
His case, though, defying their efforts, and in September he revealed he was nearing his endpoint with the disease.
I guess I'm gradually going downhill with things, certainly not what I was a year or so ago. And where my tumour was centred or is centred and spreading around, that's in the temporal aspect of the brain, and that aspect is involved in many things, but one of them is in discussion and interaction with people. And I'm definitely noticing I'm having more trouble coming up with the right words at the right time. And yeah, people notice it.
Sometimes Richard will accidentally use the wrong word, sometimes without noticing.
Wife Kate Nicol is a doctor like her husband and only too familiar with the uncharacteristic changes, like when he recently made a video paying tribute to the Chris O'Brien Lifehouse, a medical facility named for another prominent cancer researcher who lost his own cancer battle.
And he talking into his camera and he goes, I just want to sort of, you know, special mention of Chris O'Brien Landscaping. Yeah, it's good to laugh. It feels good to laugh because if it was just the stress, the worry and, I guess, sadness, things would be very difficult.
The family knows there are more difficult days ahead, but for now they're focusing on living life the best way possible.
That report from Nick Grimm and Hamish McDonald. NATO Chief Mark Rutte has urged Europe to prepare for war like our grandparents endured. During a hard-hitting speech in Germany, Mr. Rutte said that some countries in the West weren't taking the threat of Russia seriously and needed to urgently raise their defence spending. He's warning European countries they are Russia's next target. Europe Bureau Chief Mazoe Ford is in London. Mazoe, what was in Mark Rutte's speech?
Rachel, he said that too many allies of the NATO military alliance did not feel the urgency of Russia's threat in Europe, and he said they must rapidly increase defence spending and production. He warned that Russia could be ready to use military force against NATO within 5 years. What he's trying to do with this speech, Rachel, is reach a couple of audiences. Firstly, US President Donald Trump, who earlier this week called European leaders weak and said Europe was decaying. But he's also speaking to those in the EU who aren't spending as much on defence as others. Let's have a listen to some of what he said today.
We are Russia's next target, and we are already in harm's way. Russia has brought war back to Europe, and we must be prepared for the scale of war our grandparents and great-grandparents endured.
NATO Chief Mark Rutte there. Mazzoli, there have been a number of meetings on Ukraine about peace talks and security guarantees overnight. What's happened there?
So Volodymyr Zelensky's held a video call with top US officials, including Secretary of State Marco Rubio, Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth, and the White House Special Envoy Steve Witkoff, to speak about what he's put forward as a revised peace plan to the one that the US did. Mr. Zelensky says Ukraine needs to know how its partners would respond if Russia launched a new attack after a peace deal. And he's proposing, I guess, a demilitarized free economic zone in parts of eastern Ukraine where Kyiv's troops would withdraw. But he's told the US that any territorial concessions as a whole would need to be put to a referendum. And he wants this peace framework that would include the security guarantees and an agreement on rebuilding his country. We've also seen a meeting with the Coalition of the Willing, those countries that have pledged to help Ukraine in the event of a ceasefire. They've been meeting to discuss what they might do. And President Vladimir Putin's been holding meetings today with commanders of Moscow's forces who say that they have now taken full control of the town of Siversk in eastern Ukraine, which has been a long-time target for Moscow. And it's seen as a stepping stone towards taking Slovyansk, which is one of the two biggest cities in Donetsk, which is still under Ukrainian control. So while these talks are happening between the US and the Ukraine, Russia's really glad to see the delay. It wants to keep gaining territory, and the ongoing conversations allow Russia to try to do that. Ukraine, though, says that the gains that Russia is claiming haven't happened.
Mazzoli Ford there in London. If you've been near a cafe recently, there's a good chance you've seen how popular matcha has become. The Japanese green tea powder is in such demand, producers are struggling to keep up. Now, counterfeit products are on the rise. North Asia correspondent James Oten reports from Uji.
It's late morning, and this matcha shop in Uji, just south of Kyoto in Japan, is fast selling out of stock. Many in this city renowned for its tea and matcha are tourists from overseas.
So there's been an explosion. You can't not see matcha anywhere you go.
Matcha went viral after social media influencers praised its health benefits, rich flavour and gentler caffeine hit when compared to coffee. But growing new plants takes 5 years, meaning farmers like Jintaro Yamamoto are struggling to meet demand.
It's incredibly gratifying to see Japanese culture being recognised by people around the world. It's deeply regrettable that we can't meet the demands.
Now there's concern counterfeit products are filling the gaps. Matsutsugu Nonomura handles international sales at the tea production company Marukyu Koyamain. He's been buying misleading matcha online. Some packets rip off famous brand names. Others falsely claim to be from Uji, Japan, while some completely copy the entire packaging of Japanese products.
If consumers buy something believing it to be Uji matcha and find it not nearly as delicious as expected, there is a risk they will simply stop buying it.
Japan's Ministry of Agriculture says it's impossible to put a specific number on counterfeit products, but says complaints are increasing. Tomoyuki Kawai from the department's tea division says it's had some success lobbying Beijing to prevent Chinese companies from trademarking names like Uji Matcha.
Given the rising overseas demand for Japanese teas, especially matcha, we're starting to see people who produce counterfeit products.
Matsusugu Nonomura says Chinese producers should market themselves honestly.
China should compete with its own brand names if it claims to have quality products.
A fight to protect a much-loved product. This is James Oten in Uji reporting for AM.
And that's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Rachel Mealy.
Hello, I'm Sydney Peed from the ABC News Daily podcast. Streaming giant Netflix is battling Paramount for control of the historic Warner Brothers studio and its treasure trove of film and TV content. Today, Chris Bumbray, editor-in-chief of entertainment news website joblo.com, on what it means for how we watch shows and movies and whether this moment marks the end of cinema as we know it. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.